Good morning. It is time to get up with the Saints quarterback room, where a number one pick comes marching in and maybe changes everything. It's not getting enough attention. We're all over it. Then they have a plan. Wait until you hear the outstanding news coming from the world of baseball and the possibility of when we may see it back. And then, as for these guys, that's a little more complicated. You want to know exactly where they stand? We've got those answers in this hour of Get Up, which starts right now. And we are delighted you have chosen to get up with us on a Wednesday. I'm Greeny. We are in Bristol, and we are thrilled that you are here. And it is our job to try and keep you entertained and distracted from all the other things going on in your life right now. And we have plenty to do it with. And let's start by getting up and going with the NFL determining that Tom Brady did not violate any off-season work rules when he recently tried to enter Bucs offensive coordinator Byron Leftwich's home. Brady was going to retrieve a playbook but accidentally entered the wrong house. No harm, no foul, says the NFL. Elsewhere, North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper said yesterday he expects the Coca-Cola 600 to be held without fans on its traditional date over Memorial Day weekend, quote, unless health conditions go down in the state. Elsewhere, five-star point guard Dacian Nix has decommitted from UCLA and signed with the NBA's new G League Pathway program. He's the third top prospect to do that, including the number one player in the country. We're going to talk about it in this hour. And then our top story this morning, Jameis Winston and the Saints officially agreeing to a one-year contract on Tuesday. Winston was with Charlie Ward on Instagram Live last night and talked about why he chose to sign with New Orleans.
Being a part of New Orleans Saints, being a part with Drew Brees, Taysom Hill, Sean Payton, Coach Joe Lombardi, Coach Pete Carmichael Jr., when you think about that room, I mean, that's like a Harvard education in quarterback school. So I wanted to put my ego aside, put the money to aside and think about my family, think about my career. So it's a proverb, humility comes before honor. So I have to humble myself. And this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be with Drew Brees and to be with the New Orleans Saints and just prepare for when my next opportunity is going to present itself.
Hey, humility, such an interesting conversation to have there, and I've got my crew ready to go. Dan Orlovsky, Mike Tannenbaum, Dominique Foxworth are here this morning. Mr. T, I want to start with you. From being in a position where you're the type who makes these decisions, as you were listening to Jameis there, what did you hear?
That was outstanding. It sounds like somebody that was maturing not only on the field but off the field. He was recently married, and I think that's exactly right. Go invest a year, learn from a really good program, from the coaches to the players. Learn how Drew Brees hydrates. Learn how he takes notes. Learn how he prepares. And then look what happened with Teddy Bridgewater. Teddy Bridgewater sits behind Drew Brees. Now he's the starter in Carolina. And ironically, Greeny, Drew Brees was 26 years old when he left the Chargers at an inconsistent start to his career. And now he's a Hall of Famer. Jameis Winston is now 26.
So Dan Orlovsky, I want to get specific here if we can, because it's easy for us to say he needs to learn from Drew Brees. He needs to learn in this program. What makes a person throw 30 interceptions? What specifically is it he has to learn?
Yeah, two areas, Greeny. First of all, no panic throws. Jameis needs to get the panic throws out of his game. And his ability to watch Drew Brees, Drew has gotten into his game the ability to not panic. Because if you ever watch him warm up, like Drew will throw a ball to the right, and then with the ball out of his hands, he'll kind of train his body to muscle memory. Go to number two in the progression. Go to number three. Go to number four. And so that's the way he's trained his body to never have to make these panic throws, where if number one's not there, his body is so in routine and in muscle memory where he'll know where number two or number three or number four is. And so that minimizes those panic throws of not knowing where guys are. And then number two is he's going to be able to sit back and watch Drew Brees, a guy that's incredibly accomplished and incredibly talented, play some boring football. And what I mean by that is, hey, 3-yard completion, 4-yard completion. He took a check down. Man, he threw the ball away. And Jameis could sit there and watch Drew Brees do that and think to himself, wait, the guy that's going to be in the Hall of Fame is willing to do that stuff. I can still be a great player and be willing to play boring football when that's what the defense allows me to do. And so, Greeny, if he gets rid of those panic throws by watching Drew Brees in the muscle memory, and if he's willing to play some boring football by watching Drew Brees, he's absolutely going to be a starter in the NFL again. again.
Yeah, and so, Dominique, let's pick up on that thought there. He's 26 years old. He has talent that made him the number one pick in the draft, and he's thrown for 5,000 yards in a season. Why isn't he the successor to Drew Brees in New Orleans? Could they have wound up putting themselves in an extraordinary situation if he develops in the way that Dan is suggesting?
I think he should be the successor to Drew Brees in New Orleans because of Sean Payton and because of Drew Brees. I know everyone is pointing to Teddy Bridgewater as someone that Jameis can look at and try to model his kind of holdover in New Orleans. But I think actually Drew Brees is the guy, because when Drew Brees came there, as Coach T said, they were around the same age, but their stats were almost identical if you look at their careers up until this point. And I think what Sean Payton was able to do with Drew Brees, we forget they drafted in San Diego, the Chargers drafted Phillip Rivers while Drew Brees was there. We forget that Drew Brees was not always on this Hall of Fame trajectory. And I think he owes a lot of credit to Sean Payton. I think Sean Payton could potentially do the same thing for Jameis. And Jameis has been in high-pressure situations his entire career, even if you go back to college. He's never really had a chance to sit back and look and learn football. So I hope he gets this opportunity, and I hope he ends up staying in New Orleans.
So if the opportunity comes next year or beyond, that's one thing. If it comes this year, as happened last year, very quickly, or around the horn, Tannenbaum, I'll start with you. Week 5, Drew Brees gets hurt, and he's going to miss 4 weeks. Who becomes the starting quarterback in New Orleans?
Jameis Winston, they already answered that question. Taysom Hill only threw 6 passes last year. If they believed he'd be the starter, they wouldn't have signed Winston.
You guys both agree with that, Dan? Dominique, you both agree he gets the ball and not Taysom Hill?
Yeah, no-brainer.
Neek, you agree too?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so it's as simple as that. So maybe he gets the opportunity this year. Maybe it takes another year. But either way, this could be the best possible situation for Jameis Winston. And that leaves one superly accomplished quarterback, which is not good English, but you know what I mean, who's out there looking for a team, and that's Cam Newton. He remains a free agent. The Panthers released him last month after 9 seasons with the team, replacing him with Teddy Bridgewater. And frankly, it's almost impossible to overstate the accomplishments that he has had in his career, but the questions right now are all about health. From entering the league in 2011 through 2017, he missed just 3 games. And, of course, he was a league MVP and went to a Super Bowl. But going back to 2018 now, he has missed 16 games, including back-to-back season-ending injuries to his throwing shoulder and his foot. So as we look at this situation, again, Mike Tannenbaum, I'll come back to you as a general manager. How does this play out for him?
I think the landing spot for me would be New England. And I know that's not a great scheme fit, but I worked for Coach Belichick a couple of times. He likes to sign players that have given him trouble defending. And Cam Newton is 2-0 against Coach Belichick. When healthy, he averages 10 wins a year, 33 touchdowns, and maybe there's a package for him. The big question on Cam is he healthy? But he's a weapon, and I know he's not exactly what Jarrett Stidham is or certainly what Tom Brady was, but it could give them a different element to that New England offense.
So this, I've been lobbying this for the longest time, if only because I'm in the interesting business, and nothing could be more interesting than Cam Newton going to New England. Dan Orlovsky, do you like it?
No, I don't. I haven't. I mean, New England would have to scrap everything they've done in their playbook for the last 20 years and totally bring in a new thought process for Cam Newton. So I don't see it. I think it's important to point this out. Like, Cam is not signed on a team, not because he can't play anymore, right? Like, this isn't a guy that his talent all of a sudden fell off and teams are like, well, do we want to bring him on? Is it worth it anymore? This is all tied to that shoulder injury, really, from 2018. You know, a big question that teams are going to have to ask Cam Newton is, what is your expectation for your role? What is your expectation for your money? And then are you still willing to be a runner with the football? Because if Cam Newton sits there and says, yes, I'm going to give you 100 carries a year, I feel healthy, my body is good, that year off was really big for me, then Cam's a starter. There's no question about it. But if Cam goes, you know what, I don't want that to be part of my game anymore, it got me to here, I'm not going to be used as a runner, then that really minimizes his window or teams that will allow him to be a part of their team. And so, listen, teams that you can say need to upgrade or should upgrade their backup quarterback spot, you could look at Tennessee if Cam's willing to be a backup there. You could look at the Pittsburgh Steelers. You could look at the Denver Broncos. You could look at Seattle. You could look at the Dallas Cowboys in upgrading their backup quarterback spot for a playoff caliber football team. So that's the question for Cam. What role does he want?
Yeah, I mean, to me, Neek, that brings up the question of psyche. And you've talked a lot about psychology on the show over the last few days involving Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre. Does Cam Newton feel to you like a guy who is ready to walk into a building someplace and say, all good, I'm the backup, I'm just going to take that role?
Absolutely not. I agree with all the things that Dan was saying, except for some of those teams that have established quarterbacks. Like, why would Cam Newton at this age want to go behind Dak Prescott or Russell Wilson? Like, Cam Newton should want to and probably does want to go to a place like the Buffalo Bills. I like that spot for him because that's a situation where the offense is not that different from what he's used to. The quarterback who's starting is doing kind of an imitation of Cam and how he plays. I think that's a place where he would want to go. I'm sure that it's not something Josh Allen would welcome necessarily, but I'm not sure that Cam Newton doesn't give them a better chance to take over the AFC East than any other quarterback that they have on their roster or that is currently available.
Well, I'm going to quote a great man, and that man is named Dominique Foxworth. You once said on this show, Josh Allen is a poor man's, no, a destitute man's Cam Newton. So Dan, I'll come back to you. If Cam Newton is healthy, if he is all the things you just described, is he a better starting quarterback for Buffalo than the one they have?
I don't see that. No, I think Josh Allen is this player that's ascending and on the rise, and not only on the field, but off the field. He's really taken ownership of the Buffalo Bills, and he is a version of what Cam was once as a young player. And so if I'm Buffalo, while I do believe it would impact our football team if I had to turn to him on the field, I wouldn't do that because I want to make sure that Josh Allen knows you're our guy. We believe in you. This is your team. And I always talk about this process, Greeny, becoming the CEO of the billion-dollar company. And I wouldn't want to undermine a young player that is on the trajectory.
Go ahead, Nate.
I could understand that. I buy that point that potentially it's disruptive to have someone come in there and undermine Josh Allen. But you know what helps? Balling. And you know what Cam Newton can do? He can ball. You saw that playoff game that they had last year where Josh Allen was throwing balls across his body to fullbacks deep down the field and trying to do laterals and whatnot. I think Josh Allen is a young, talented quarterback. He's gotten better, but he's not Cam Newton in his prime. And the idea that you think that there's even something to think about, that if Cam Newton can return to the form that he was before that he was hampered by these injuries, that him and Josh Allen are even in the same conversation, I think is a little bit absurd.
Mike T, I got 15 seconds or for you. Go.
I agree with Zeke. If healthy, if Cam Newton signed with Buffalo, he would be the best quarterback in the AFC East today. I'm not talking about for the next 5 years, Sam Darnold or Tua. I'm saying right now, Josh Allen has a fatal flaw. He was inconsistent down the field at Wyoming. He was inconsistent in that playoff game, and he was last year. Cam Newton would be the best quarterback.
He came for your man, Darnold.
The look on Dan Orlovsky's face echoes the feeling in my soul. We will talk about that as we continue this morning, but I got other business to get to. Coming up next, Clayton Kershaw has a time frame for baseball's return, and Jeff Passan is going to put a huge smile on your face if you are a baseball fan. That's coming up next. Don't miss it. And then, after a draft that landed him a big offensive weapon, should fantasy players be scooping up Dak Prescott? You'll hear the answer to that as this hour continues. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Get Up is brought to you by Can-Am Off-Road Living. All right, we have good news. Major League Baseball continues to explore different options for starting the 2020 season in light of the pandemic. And Dodgers ace Clayton Kershaw was a guest on SportsCenter yesterday and listened to the optimism he feels about the possibility of return.
I've been figuring out a little bit, and, you know, I kind of think we're going to come back. I really do, and I'm optimistic about that, and, you know, I'm thinking, I'm kind of preparing like we're going to be back in July at some point. I have no basis for that. It's just kind of what I feel.
All right, so I like his optimism. And actually, if you read Jeff Passan's lengthy piece earlier this week on ESPN.com, you would like his optimism as well. Good morning, Jeff. For those who didn't get to read it, as you went through all of the different circumstances surrounding baseball's return at this point, what are the most important thing the fans need to know?
I think optimism, Greeny, is the right word here. And it's optimism in a lot of different and important circles of baseball. It's optimism at the commissioner's office. It's optimism among the players. It's optimism among the owners, executives, even the doctors and medical professionals and politicians who are going to be so integral to getting this off the ground. The important thing at this point is figuring out what plan exactly they're going to try to execute, because Major League Baseball still isn't there yet. What they've always felt is, hey, we've got time on our side. We can see the country reopening now. You know, a quarter of Major League stadiums could theoretically be open at the beginning of May with the lifting of stay-at-home orders if the governors of certain states allow that to happen. So we could potentially and eventually see baseball games played at Major League stadiums this year. But the ideas that most people at this point think are feasible and realistic, Greeny, are the ideas of hub cities. And what I mean by that is you would have, say, a three hub city with Phoenix, the Dallas metropolitan area, and the Tampa St. Pete area. You would have a five hub city where you throw in Houston and throw in Miami as well, and you have teams go there. You would group teams in those areas, have games every day, have them in their time zones, have their games played and televised, which makes everybody happy. That's what they're really looking for here.
Yeah. Again, if you haven't read the piece, there's a lot of detail like that in it, and all these things seem to be on the table. Now, let's talk about another one of these possibilities, because one official told you, give us 60 days and we could run an amazing tournament. If they don't have the kind of time we're talking about and they need to condense greatly, what would we be looking at then?
So, listen, this was simply an idea I came up with off the top of my head. I don't know if it's been talked about at Major League Baseball. What I do know is that they've been talking about ideas like this. And what you would do is you would start off in six hubs. In these six hubs, you would essentially put all the divisions. And you would play four-game series against your division opponents. The two best teams then would go on and advance to the next round, or you could have the three best teams going on and advancing to the next round. It all depends on how many teams you want to be in this playoff format. But let's say you have six divisions, you advance two teams on to the next round. That's 12 playoff teams. You don't forget about the other 18, though. The other 18 are going and playing a round-robin tournament to get a wild card that allows you to get re-entry back into this playoff. And the four teams then from each league with the best record go ahead and advance, and suddenly you get into your normal playoff system where you have five teams, the four that are advancing, plus the wild card, and you just go and have a regular playoff. Now, listen, Tim Kirkjian has said this, and I think he's right. These are all the best of bad options. When you're not playing 162 games or 154 games or a representative schedule, you're not dealing with great options, but that's all we've got right now. And if we can have any baseball this year, which I really believe we're going to, that is better than nothing.
I so thoroughly agree. This is a perfect illustration of another great phrase, which is don't let perfect be the enemy of good. Or in this case, the enemy
Amen to that.
The enemy of not completely disastrous, right? Let's do the best we can under the circumstances that are presented and go from there. Again, I strongly recommend Jeff's entire piece on ESPN.com lays out all of this and a whole lot more. Jeff Passan, thanks.
Thanks, Greeny.
All right, so that's all good. Now, let's try and put another smile on your face, because we're just a few days removed from the NFL draft. And so we thought football fans probably would like to think about their fantasy teams. So here's Field Yates to break down the rookies position by position. Let's start with the number one pick. Field, Joe Burrow, what do we expect?
Yeah, Greeny, Joe Burrow, so exciting for the Bengals and their franchise right now. From a fantasy perspective, while it's hard to find a spot for him comfortably inside my top 20 quarterbacks for 2020, I think he's right on the borderline. That's more a reflection, by the way, of the great depth that we have at quarterback for fantasy football purposes around the league. But great weapons there in Cincinnati. Excited to see Joe Burrow. But it's his teammate at LSU, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the running back who landed at the 32nd pick to the Kansas City Chiefs, that I'm the most excited about amongst all rookies. How about this? Over the past 16 years, Andy Reid has produced 10 top 10 running backs. It's probably a little bit rich for Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but he should be a monster part of what is, at least in the discussion, for the very best offense in football. Patrick Mahomes has never thrown an interception when targeting a running back. And how about one wide receiver that I'm excited about amongst the rookie class? It's CeeDee Lamb. I don't know how he slipped to pick 17 in the draft to the Dallas Cowboys, but you can make a case right now that they have the best wide receiver trio in football, and Lamb has an experienced quarterback throwing him the ball, so there aren't as many concerns about some of the other young wideouts who might be catching passes from less experienced quarterbacks than Dak Prescott. He's certainly a late-round flyer to consider, even in 10-team leagues.
All right, that's a really interesting point. We're actually going to go to Dallas Live a little later in the show and talk more about the Dak situation. Because with him not there, he's not participating in the virtual offseason program, however significant that is. But you mentioned the weapons. What does Dak look like right now as far as the quarterbacks?
I think there's a pretty comfortable conversation about Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes as the top two quarterbacks in fantasy. But it gets really interesting at number three, and that's where I think Dak Prescott enters the mix. Dak last year threw for 4,900 yards. He's got an average of over 5 rushing touchdowns per season in his 4-year career. His weapons are as good as perhaps any quarterback has in the NFL, and the Cowboys figure to be much stronger on offense than defense this year, Greeny, which means if they have to play in shootouts, that's great news for fantasy football. So, yes, there are other quarterbacks like Russell Wilson and Kyler Murray and Deshaun Watson that could be in that mix for the third quarterback taken. But there is very much a world that exists that Dak Prescott is the third best quarterback in fantasy football this year, and that might be underselling it. He threw for nearly 5,000 yards and 30 touchdowns last season. This offense is going to score a ton of points, and they might have to in order to stay competitive in that division.
It's a pleasure to see you again, Field, and it's a pleasure to be talking about these things. Here's hoping that this is exactly what we'll be doing when we get to the fall. Great to see you. Thank you. Meanwhile, back to more football as we continue in a moment. The Packers sent a message to Aaron Rodgers in the draft. What's his reaction to what going to be? We're going there next. Get up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back. A 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
I don't know the question you're trying to ask.
You're better tomorrow.
I'm not answering that. That's a clown question, bro.
Next.
Mike, why are you in such a bad mood?
What do you care?
What else do you want to know?
Next question.
I'm not going to answer any questions for you.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Here we go, Foxworth. I'm going to ask you a series of hard-hitting, provocative questions, and you will answer them whether you want to or not. The first is this. Which quarterback drafted this year will have the most success in the NFL?
I think it's going to be Tua long-term. I think in the early stages, he may not have a ton of success. He may not even play in his first season. I think Herbert and Burrow are likely to have more success in the first couple of years. But I think quarterbacks have success in large part because of the infrastructure around them. And I think what Chris Greer and Brian Flores has showed last year, seems like they're going to be able to build something in a division that may be up for grabs. And I don't know about Burrow playing against the Ravens. The Ravens have not been bad ever in their franchise, and they probably won't be anytime soon. The same can be said for the Steelers. It's a tough place to go for Burrow, so I'm going to lean Tua as a safe place to go, and he's shown over the course of multiple seasons in college that he can be an effective quarterback doing the things that NFL coaches want to see.
I like that. Let's stay in that division then. With the rosters as they currently stand, who is your pick to win the AFC East?
I mean, I think it's the Bills. That defense is tremendous, and it got better. I like what they did in the draft with that team. I think Josh Allen is a decent quarterback, which is more than you can say for a lot of teams in that division. He's possibly the second best quarterback in that division right now until Tua gets healthy. And adding Stephon Diggs is an amazing weapon to make life a lot easier for a guy with a big arm. You have a guy who can get deep and open that offense up. But I still think this team is dependent on that defense. I doubt that the defense is going to get much worse. I know they are in line for a little bit of regression, but you can count on that defense to show up, and I think they're going to win a lot of games. And if they don't win this year, they should be sorely disappointed because they're the most talented team in that division.
Okay, and then here's the last one. I've been looking forward to this all morning. What one word would best describe your state of mind right now if you were Aaron Rodgers?
Befuddled, I think. I would just be shocked and confused. We were a game away from the championship. I, in many people's minds, am the best quarterback that has ever played in the NFL. And rather than getting me the things I need, you go and draft my successor. And I think that's not even the most, like, egregious part of this. The most egregious part is we know we need a receiver. This is the deepest draft for receivers in the history of the NFL draft. And you don't draft one? Like, to me, that almost feels like you are purposely trying to put your thumb in my eye. Like, I'd be confused. What did I do? What did I say? At what point did I do something to offend you that you would go into this draft and move up to get a guy who is kind of a boom or bust prospect to replace me and then not even get me any help throughout the process? Not use a first round pick on a tackle to replace Bulaga, to not use any of your picks on a receiver to help out Devontae Adams. To me, I would just be confused and befuddled.
I want to bring Dan Orlovsky in on that note because, Dan, refresh my memory. You know Matt LaFleur pretty well, and I sort of side with, that's not necessarily taking a side, but I agree with Dominique that this does feel purposeful. It almost feels like a message being sent. What's your perspective here?
Yeah, Greeny, I know LaFleur well. Greeny, I actually think I was on your show when news broke that the Packers were going to hire Matt LaFleur. And I remember one of the first things out of my mouth was, Matt LaFleur will not back down to Aaron Rodgers. And I thought that would be a very good thing to challenge Aaron Rodgers and try to, at the back half of his career, really push him to greatness again. And it just feels like he's not backing down from Aaron Rodgers. He's making moves with his vision in place for the future. And I've heard Dan Graziano come on the show a bunch over the last week and mention their general manager, Brian Gutekunst, making the point of, Matt LaFleur was the hire for now, but also for the future. Like, they had the future in mind when they made that hire. And then in the first round, they drafted Jordan Love with the future in mind. And so those are two pretty impactful moves when it comes to Aaron Rodgers. And both of those seem to be thinking more towards the future rather than the present. And I agree with Dom. Like, I would be befuddled. I'd be infuriated. I'd be ticked off. I'd have a range of emotions. But this feels very odd to handle Aaron Rodgers in the back half of his career like this for Green Bay.
Let's just assess, Dominique, the logic of starting to plan for your future. It's all well and good to have a plan for the future. No one's going to criticize that. But to be putting all of your eggs into your future basket when you have a first ballot Hall of Fame quarterback who is still reasonably close to his best, and you were one game away from the Super Bowl last year, it strikes me as nonsensical.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense because for this to work out for them, lightning needs to strike. Like, Love needs to live up to all the crazy people who said they remind him of Patrick Mahomes. Like, he's got to be one of the best quarterbacks in the league to throw away your present to go after your future, and to not get anybody else seems so disrespectful. We can add on a bunch more words for Aaron Rodgers. I'd be flummoxed. I'd be vexed. I'd be perplexed. Like, I don't get this. I'd be angry. I'd be infuriated. I'll keep going. Don't make me break out of the thesaurus, Greeny. I'm losing my breath. I'm so mad.
Yeah, it's just confusing. So how do you think, Dan, that Aaron winds up handling this?
I don't think it ends well, Greeny. I don't know Aaron that well. I knew him coming out. We were the same draft class, and I've obviously followed his career. He is a fiery, competitive, prideful guy. The same with Matt LaFleur. I think it's going to be really difficult for Matt LaFleur to sit down and go, yeah, Aaron, this was what was best for us right now. You can't justify that. You cannot say that. I think Aaron will be a pro, and he'll be mature, and he'll continue to be one of the great leaders in the NFL. I just don't see how it ends amicably. And I also think this, Greeny, it's not only the message that it sends to Aaron Rodgers, it's the message that it sends to your whole football team as well. Like, does everybody on that football team truly believe that they're all in to win right now?
Yeah.
I think with those picks in their first two rounds, it says something other than that.
And that doesn't seem like a mistake. Like, it seems purposeful. The whole thing of not drafting a receiver, it seems like they are trying to send that message to Aaron Rodgers and that entire team that this is no longer his show. This is now Matt LaFleur's show. We're going to draft a running back early who doesn't have much of a history of catching the ball. We're going to draft offensive linemen. We're going to draft a quarterback of the future and push that way. So they're trying to tell everybody that it's not Aaron Rodgers' team anymore.
And you know what doesn't work with that? A quarterback who you cannot move on from under any circumstances in the next 2 years and probably three, based upon what would be a crippling hit to the salary cap if you did it. To me, this is a fascinating thing to watch. Meanwhile, as we talk about quarterback situations, let's talk about the one in Philadelphia. We'll get to that next. Did Carson Wentz get a backup in the draft, or did the Eagles find their own Taysom Hill? Why Jalen Hurts gives Philly more options than you think. We're going live there to Sal Palantonio in a moment. And the first thing he'll do is try to answer this one from Sneaky Hembo. Who was the last player the Eagles drafted outside the first round that made the Pro Bowl? That's the question. The answer is next. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
We're the 53rd pick in the 2020 NFL Draft. The Philadelphia Eagles select.
I try to get what I think is mine.
Jalen Hurts.
Playing behind Carson Wentz, being coached by Doug Peterson, you couldn't ask for anything better.
I think it's a heck of a move on all levels for the Philadelphia Eagles.
I have this opportunity to go to the next level. It's a blessing.
Wasn't that fascinating? We're going to talk about it in just a moment. We're going to talk about it with Sal Palantonio. But first, Sal's going to try and answer this one from Sneaky Hembo. Sal, who's the last player the Eagles drafted outside round one that made the Pro Bowl?
I'm going to go with Travis Kelce's more handsome brother, Jason Kelce.
That's close, but not right. The answer is Zach Ertz. Zach Ertz was a second-round pick in 2013, and he made the Pro Bowl. His second-round pick is the operative term here as we're going to get to Jalen Hurts. And I can't explain it, but there's something about seeing Sal Palantonio on TV talking about the Eagles that makes me feel like all is sort of well again in the world. Sal, it really is a pleasure to see you. So let's talk about this. They take him in the second round, 53rd overall. We all understand the dynamics of the quarterback situation there. What has been the reaction in Philly to that pick?
Oh, man, they're getting hammered. All my paisans on 97.5 The Fanatic in Philadelphia, Sports Talk Radio, Mark Farzetta, Anthony Gargano, Mike Missinelli, they can't handle all the negative calls. But, you know, Michael, the Eagles were expecting this to be a very controversial call. GM Howie Roseman, when he was about to make the pick, went on the Microsoft connection with everybody else in the organization. I'm going to go to the glasses here like Tony Kornheiser on PTI. He said to everybody, we are going to pick Jalen Hurts here, so hold on to the side of the boat. It's going to get rocky. So he knew it was going to be a tough pick for people to accept. Carson Wentz, big new contract, signed to 2024. They had many other needs. But when you look at these numbers, I want to put up this graphic. And when you look at these numbers, the Jalen Hurts pick, 53rd in the second round, is not really an outlier. Since 2000, every single college football quarterback with a single season line of 3,000 passing yards, 30 touchdown passes, 1,000 rush yards, Deshaun Watson, Lamar Jackson, Kyler Murray, all first-round picks, all made an immediate impact. Fourth guy on that list, Jalen Hurts.
So it's less to me, I hear what you're saying, but that's the Hurts part of it. How about the Eagles part of it? How does he fit into what they're doing?
Well, I texted Doug Peterson right after the pick, and I said, hey, you got Carson Wentz, you just signed him, you've got other needs, why did you make this pick right here? And here's what he texted me back, and I want you to pay attention to the specific words that he used, but he's always very specific in the message that he sends me. He said, quote, he has a great skill set that we can use as a quarterback and as a runner. He's tough, competitive, a proven winner. Now, Michael, that doesn't sound like a coach that's going to have Jalen Hurts riding the pine on the bench. That sounds like a coach to me that is going to use this guy right away to have an immediate and long-term impact on this football team. And, you know, it is Philly. So let's keep it real. The Eagles have been in six postseason games since Doug Peterson came on board. Won a Super Bowl. Carson Wentz has been in a grand total of 9 offensive snaps in those 6 postseason games. Backup quarterback was a major need of this football team.
It's a really important point. That's so well done. Sal, it's so great to see you. Thank you, my man. Let's do this again soon. That's obviously one of the most interesting situations in the sport. And so let me bring Orlovsky in on that thought, Dan, because Sal just said they didn't draft this guy to just stick him on the pine. He's going to have a role in the offense. What do you envision that being?
Well, Greeny, I've talked about them putting both these quarterbacks, Carson Wentz and Jalen Hurts, on the field at the same time, and I expect them to run multiple RPOs on every single play that they do it. Now, they're going to have to be creative with the way they do it, but Eagles fans, imagine the receiver up at the top of the screen is DeSean Jackson, and then at the bottom of the screen is Dallas Goedert and Ertz and Jalen Reagor, your first-round pick. Now, what Oklahoma did was they flash-faked through the running back, and they ran a version of a PRO where they stressed the boundary with Jalen Hurts, and those receivers at the bottom of the screen, they're going to run real pass concept routes. And they taught Jalen Hurts, listen, if that's second level defenders, when you're running the football, if they come attack you, throw the ball behind them and it's a huge gash in your pass game. But I've talked about 2 quarterbacks on the field at the same time. So let's use our imagination here. Let's pretend the tailback is not on this play and Carson Wentz is at your traditional quarterback spot and Jalen Hurts is off to his left. He's going to go across Carson Wentz's face on a run play. And this is the RPO number 1 where Carson Wentz will catch this snap and flash it to Jalen Hurts. And he's going to read that backside linebacker. If he attacks the run, throw the slant behind to that single receiver, DeSean Jackson. And if he stays back, now hand it off to Jalen Hurts. Now here comes the fun, because Jalen Hurts now has got some lead blockers out in front of him, and he looks like a runner. He's going to stress the horizontal aspect of the field. And you teach him, hey, if those defenders stay back, I want you to go to those blockers out in front. It becomes a run play. But if they come and attack you, RPO option number 2, you throw that ball over their heads to our pass game concept. This is just a small version of how I expect the Eagles to use both these guys. And everyone continues to talk that Jalen Hurts is Taysom Hill. I actually think that Jalen Hurts is going to be used a little bit like Cordell Stewart early on in his career. Cordell Stewart's first year, he had about 7 pass attempts, 15 carries, and 14 catches. And then his second year, he had like 30 pass attempts, 40 catches, and 40 carries and 17 catches. And that was part of his development. I see them using Jalen Hurts like the Steelers used Cordell Stewart.
That is fascinating and so well done. And if that's what football is going to start to look like going forward, personally, I think it's going to be fabulous. I have a million other questions on that we will get to a little bit later, Dan. That's well done. First, let me remind everyone of what our day looks like here on ESPN. First Take will follow us on Get Up, followed by SportsCenter and NFL Live. Then at 3, Rachel Nichols with The Jump. Then SportsCenter's at 5 with the PTI guys joining the show. And cap the day with another SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt, midnight Eastern on ESPN and on the ESPN app. On November 18th of 2018, Washington quarterback Alex Smith suffered a horrific compound fracture in his right leg. 4 days after surgery, doctors found a subsequent infection and had to remove a significant amount of tissue to try and save the leg. By the time they were done, Alex Smith had a long way to go to return to everyday activities, let alone to a football field. Right now, we're going to show you an excerpt from the upcoming E60 special, Project 11, which debuts this Friday.
Am I going to ever be like normal and functional? And really like having strong doubt in my head that that was going to be a reality.
The way that the doctors explained it to us, he no longer has a sports injury. He has what would be more comparable to a military injury. He has like a blast injury.
It should be remarkable, and you will see it again. The E60 special, Project 11, this Friday night, 7:30 Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. Let's go to the NBA, where there may be signs of the league restarting. Our Dave McMenamin says the Lakers have been in contact with the L.A. mayor's office to discuss the possibility of reopening their practice facility before May 15th. That same day, however, Steve Kerr had this to say about the Warriors coming back to play this season.
It's different for us because, you know, we were down to 17 games, but we were out of the playoffs. And it feels like the end of the season for our team. It just does. And we don't know anything officially. There's still a chance the league could ask us to come back and play some games. But everybody is just sort of assuming that, you know, this is kind of it. We're not going to be involved much anymore.
So mixed messages there. Let's go to our NBA insider extraordinaire. Good morning, Woj. What is the latest that we are hearing on the NBA and their plans for return?
Well, I think Steve Kerr's comments to start there, Greeny, I think sounded more like a preference or a hope that they don't have anything to play for. And there are a lot of teams in that boat who aren't going to be in the playoffs, who are in the lottery, who the few regular season games you might play in a resumption of the season don't really carry value to the players, the coaches. I think teams who have younger rosters would like to get some, almost treat it like kind of a summer league mini camp. But the league still is forging on, trying to find a way to get there. You know, the Lakers, other teams would like to be able to get back in their gyms on a very limited startup basis. And, you know, these workouts would be just voluntary workouts, players no more than four at a time in the gym. Just getting a ball back in their hands, having a basket to shoot at, and that's where we are right now. It's a very long way from a legitimate resumption of play, and that's still something that is very much up in the air for the league.
All right, so while we wait for that, there was some news yesterday, Woj, I wanted to get a very quick perspective on from you here. It involves a five-star point guard by the name of Dacian Nix, who has decommitted from UCLA and signed on with the NBA's new G League Pathway program. He's the third top prospect to join the G League. Another one of them, Jalen Green, is the potential number one pick in the draft. We talked about this when Jalen made that decision a few weeks ago, and you see some of the names here on your screen. They're going into this Pathway program. Again, I will ask you, Woj, what is the reaction around the sport right now with these players making this decision to go to the G League?
Well, two things, Greeny. Number one, remember, this is what the NCAA said it wanted when Condoleezza Rice's commission said that one and done should be eliminated. Players who didn't want to be in college basketball should have a legitimate option out there. And now it's there with this G League professional pathway program. The league would prefer to have one and done be finished. They haven't agreed with the Players Association on how that would look and a deal that would allow players to go right directly into the NBA. So this is really a bridge program. And what's changed this is the money. The NBA's willingness to pay anywhere between, you know, $250,000, $500,000 for the elite players. They had a program in place at $125,000. That wasn't moving anyone. And also they're being put in an elite program, not in the rigors of a G League schedule where you're flying all over the country on Southwest and getting up at 6 a.m. For connecting flights through Iowa. That's not what the elite players want to be in at that age. And so I think this benefits both sides. This is what both sides have said they wanted. And for the NBA now, they get their elite prospects in an environment that they can control, especially in a year or maybe 2 years coming up, where who knows what college athletics looks like. This is a training ground now to protect their precious resources, which is the future talent of their league.
It's going to be really, we're going to have Jalen Rose and Jay Will a little later this morning with thoughts on this. It's fascinating to me. Woj, thank you. Great to see you. We'll check in again soon. Meanwhile, back to football we will go as we continue next. Dak Prescott and the Cowboys offense got a lot better in the draft. We'll tell you why one addition will make a huge impact immediately. Next, get up. ESPN.